This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'd like to thank our sponsors who make our podcast possible. We tape our podcast with the ongoing support of Raider and Jason Sikora, our sound engineer. Raider is a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Iberia Bank and First Horizon, who are now one bank. Two relationship-driven banks, both leaders in the industry, have officially joined forces. The combination of Iberia Bank and First Horizon creates a leading financial services company dedicated to enriching the lives of their clients, associates, and their communities. I'd also like to thank Lafayette General Health, who has joined the Ochsner Health family and is now Ochsner Lafayette General. As one health system, Ochsner Lafayette General will provide expanded services and enhanced care from the familiar faces you already trust. Ochsner Lafayette General means more resources to help solve healthcare's toughest problems, reinvesting in our communities, and being further committed to health and wellness. Ochsner Lafayette General. Together means more. Learn more today at togethermeansmore.org. Mike Michaud is our guest today. Mike serves as Senior Director of State Affairs for the Picard Group, a leading governmental affairs and lobbying group in Louisiana and Washington, D.C. He previously served the Acadiana area for 16 years in the Louisiana State Senate and House of Representatives. In his final term in the State Senate, Mike was chair of the Senate Finance Committee, which directs funding for all aspects of government. He's also served on various committees, including the Louisiana State Bond Commission, Senate Natural Resources, Senate Revenue and Fiscal Affairs, Vice Chair of the Senate Commerce, Consumer Protection and International Affairs, and the House Labor and Industrial Relations Committees. Mike has also been active in private business, having previously owned and operated Premier Medical Equipment in Lafayette for 20 years. And then there's also the community. He's been very active, including his time spent volunteering with the Community Foundation of Acadiana, the American Heart Association, Boys and Girls Clubs of Acadiana, United Way of Acadiana, and the Catholic Diocese of Lafayette's Opus Christi Magnum, hope I said that right, Mike, fundraiser. He's also a graduate of Leadership Lafayette and Leadership Louisiana, a graduate of Cathedral Carmel High School in Lafayette and UL Lafayette, where he earned a degree in finance. Mike is married to Monique Broussard Michaud, and they have two children, Michael Jr. and Mary Carolyn. Mike Michaud, what an honor to welcome you to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you, Jan. Great to be with you.
Yeah. And you know, there's a board left off. I remember pulling your arm and getting you to serve on the Academy of the Sacred Hearts board.
That's been a while, huh? That's right, because my daughter and as well as your daughter were there at the time and served on that board at the Academy, and that was also another great experience.
You know, it's funny. I remember looking back. I was told not to ask you. I said, I think he'd like to serve. I mean, you were very active in your children's lives always. And one of the board members said, well, he didn't have time for that. And I said, well, if we don't ask him, he'll never do it.
No.
And you kindly, you know, accepted the offer. So,
well, thank you
for that service.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're, I think, the third Michaud. On one of our past shows, I interviewed Andre and Louis Michaud of Lost Bayou Ramblers. So I thought today we could talk about your family, your growing up under an outstanding dad, Louis Michaud, that I'm sure he taught you so much about public service and business. So I thought we could talk about that, what led you to public service, but maybe what it was like growing up as a Michaud.
Sure. I was the seventh of eight children in the Michaud family. So my dad, Louis Michaud, was involved in public service. He ran the Chamber of Commerce for a while in Lafayette. He had a short stint in D.C. lobbying for the Air Transport Association. A lot of people didn't know that, but he moved the family up to Virginia. That was before I was born, and lobbied the Air Transport Association. And my mom decided she wasn't going to live up there, so they moved back to Lafayette. Mm-hmm. And he was involved in the Chamber of Commerce, and he ultimately obtained the Burger Chef franchise in Louisiana and Mississippi, and went into business, and he was in the legislature for 4 years and then ran for governor in 63, then on the State Board of Education and was elected superintendent of education in the early 70s.
So you were young.
I was, yeah. Like
a toddler when all that started, huh?
10 years old when he left office. You know, right, almost 10 years old when he was right around that time he was superintendent of education. But
so the Burger Chef was all over the state. I remember when we got that in Baton Rouge. That was big time.
When he lived in Virginia, he saw a McDonald's for the first time, you know, and he went to visit with Ray Kroc in Chicago and asked him if he was interested in expanding in Louisiana. And Ray Kroc at the time was not. So he heard about this other company, this other chain, Burger Chef, and he went to meet with the Burger Chef folks. And they said, yeah, we are, you know, you can obtain the franchise in Louisiana and Mississippi. It was, I don't know, it was cheap at the time. And this was all undeveloped territory. So he started developing and building Burger Chefs. The first one was actually in New Iberia. The second one was here in Lafayette, right where South College goes, North College actually begins, right next to Albertsons. There was actually a Burger Chef there before the road went through, and then they rebuilt right in front of the Albertsons on the Fournette property.
Oh, my goodness. In competition with Judy Sen.
In competition with Judy Sen.
He was closer, that's closer into town. Ooh.
Judy Sen, that was a big controversy back then.
And then, but it's totally different burgers, you know. I just remember that, Mike, when I was little, we'd drive to one on Plank Road. And it was a day of the 15-cent burger, right? And you'd get root beer.
Right.
You know, and little fries. And that we were all happy to have that. You didn't go inside anywhere.
No, it was
stand in line.
It was stand in line, and
it was fast.
No indoor seating, and it was like for 99 cents or less than a dollar, you could get a meal.
Yeah.
And Mr. Fournette, who was the Papa Jack, as the Paul Fournette's father, owned all the property on Johnson Street where that first location was, and the joke was he was the landlord, so he would drive by and count the cars to see if there were enough customers so that my dad could pay the rent. Of course, the Fournette family has been lifelong friends and mentors of my dad for years.
Gosh, so he was really a blur up and down the highway, it sounds like, at that point. You were a young boy and the youngest of many children.
Right. Of course, you know, and you're operating in that world with no cell phones and no faxes or anything. So he was flying himself in his own plane to most of these locations where they were developing Burger Chefs. And then when he entered the political arena, he also used his own plane to fly across the state. I-49 wasn't built. I-10 wasn't built for many of that time. So he'd even fly to Baton Rouge sometimes. So
I'm showing my ignorance. Was he a self-made man or did he come from a family of means?
He was a self-made man. My grandfather actually worked for the Veterans Administration. He actually ran for Congress. My grandfather ran for Congress himself against Jimmy DiMaggio's grandfather, Jimmy the attorney. I think it was his grandfather that my grandfather ran against. And of course, my grandfather did not win, but he was involved in the community as well. But he worked for the VA at the time, and my grandmother was a school teacher. So they came from very, very simple, humble beginnings on North Sterling Street is where they lived.
And hardworking.
Right.
Very hardworking.
But my dad had the drive-in theater, the first drive-in theater.
Where was that?
That was where we lived on Pinhook Road, right past Vero School Road. It was called the Lafayette Drive-In, you know, before the Twin Drive-In or any other drive-ins that popped up in Lafayette. He also had a business called Steam Lux, which was a pressure washing business, basically. So he had to do whatever he could to make ends meet to feed all the mouths he had to feed.
Because y'all were at private school, it sounds like, Cathedral Carmel.
We were. We went to Cathedral and Mount Carmel before that for the girls.
Right. So you're also musically inclined. I see where you got your motivation from. Because when you grow up with that kind of influence, there's no better mentor than a loving father that shows you how things can happen.
And then the music was actually Rick and Tommy, you know, the two oldest boys in the family. Always, they played folk music over the years. I mean, Rick played the guitar and Tommy played the harmonica, and they'd play, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I guess the songs of that era, that generation. And then Rick became interested in sort of the Cajun music and culture and started playing the fiddle, and Tommy learned the accordion. And so they started recruiting my other brothers and myself, and I was in college at the time, I think, at UL, and they said, hey, we just picked up a gig to play downtown. There was a restaurant bar called Bijou's, which was right next to F&B Towers, Chase Tower. Yeah. And it's where Jefferson. That parking lot is now, uh-huh. Jefferson Towers. And Bijou's had hired us for like $100 and a case of Red Stripe beer to play on a Friday night. And they said, hey, you want to come play the triangle? So I said, sure, I'll go.
So you did the triangle? Sing?
I didn't sing. I would do a few harmonies after they figured out that mm-hmm. I could actually keep a beat with uh-huh. the triangle. So
have fun.
But start out with the triangle, then eventually played yeah. the bass. And then from the Bijou's gig, the band obtained invitations to go to festivals. And we actually traveled to Poland behind the Iron Curtain back in the late 80s. So it was a lot of fun. But Rick and Tommy were really the two that sort of paved the way and
yeah.
got the rest of us interested in Cajun culture right. and music.
Well, when this is posted on my website, discoverlafayette.net, I do have some old pictures I found online of okay. young Mike and okay. younger Michaud's.
Okay,
you know, I'll put that on there so people can see it. To put that in perspective, though, in the early 80s, which is when y'all were probably just beginning, that really was when the Cajun renaissance, the pride in the music, the food was really gathering steam. So their timing, I'm assuming that's what made them pivot
right.
to focusing on the Cajun music, because that was really a way to protect the culture and shine the light on the beauty of it.
And I think Rick and Tommy were, they mentored, folks like Dewey Balfa and Boisek wow. Ardwan, some of the old-time Cajun musicians uh-huh. Who, are, of course, have passed on, but they really wanted to embody kind of that traditional Cajun sound without all the amplification and drums. I mean, it's sort mm-hmm. of the more of the pure Cajun sound. So that's what they were following, right. and that's sort of what influenced their, of course, learning to speak. Our grandparents spoke French, uh-huh. but our parents didn't speak French around the house. So Rick and Tommy became fluent in French uh-huh. and did very well with that.
And you played the triangle.
I'll play, right, exactly. And whatever they told me to do.
Now, I have to take a walk down memory lane. I don't know if you remember when we met, but I was a young attorney at a firm called Broadhurst Brook.
Yes,
and so you remember. And which Becknell was it? There were a bunch of
Mike Becknell.
Cute young guys that were runners at the firm, and you were in college.
Right.
And I'm assuming you knew a lot of the people because of your dad's political right. connections and just growing up here.
Right.
But those were the days. That's before the 80s, oil bust.
Right, yeah.
Wait, that was like right before the oil bust.
The early 80s, that's right.
Not so much fun anymore.
No.
So I moved here in 83, and I think I started working there in 84, and you must have been
right in college.
Yeah, early college. So those were days.
Yeah, it was interesting. A different time for Lafayette, for sure.
Yeah, I had moved here after law school, and I never really thought I'd stay. But then I got here, and I fell in love with Lafayette.
Yeah.
But I really thought it would just be, when you're right out of school, you don't yeah. know what you're going to do. But I really knew back then it was just a special, different place, so
it
different
is.
From Baton Rouge.
It is. And I think Lafayette, it's small town charm with big city flair. I mean, we mm-hmm. had the arts and culture, and we had the local arts and culture with the food, music, yeah. and everything, the festivals and everything that makes mm-hmm. our culture so great. But we also had the symphony and things that, big cities have as well.
Oh,
the university, the symphony, and so many great things mm-hmm. about quality of life in Lafayette.
Right. And I think we scrap, because I know when things bust in 1986, that was really the genesis of big community gatherings. I'm trying to think, Mike, it was first the International Business Exchange.
That's
maybe
right.
around 86, 88, and then out of that came the Festival International.
That's right.
But yeah. that was because of the hard times we had that people realized we had to pivot and do other things to promote what we have. So I felt it was really a cool time to be here.
It's true. Just like Lafayette has had to pivot, with the oil and gas industry and the challenges they've mm-hmm. had, we've sort of been able to pivot and right. always can kind of adapt to the change.
Right. So you ran as a relatively young man for the House of Representatives. You want to talk about when you decided you'd like to offer that level of service?
Yeah, I'm of course, my family, my dad and Rick had run. My dad had served in politics and in elected office, and Rick was elected judge in 1990, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So I was involved in Rick's campaign. He ran mm-hmm. in three parishes back then, Lafayette, Acadia, and Vermilion. And then Tim, another brother, had been elected to the parish council in Lafayette. So the legislature was always an arena that was very exciting to me. I remember mm-hmm. going to the Capitol with my dad when he was superintendent of education and mm-hmm. walking in the back door and kind of seeing the hustle and bustle and realizing, okay, this is where the action is. So right. in 95, Don Higginbottom, who was mm-hmm. our state rep at the time, had announced he was not going to seek reelection. So I went to visit with Don and said, hey, you know, I'm interested in running. And he said, you know, great, you'd be perfect for yeah. it. So he already had one announced opponent. But when he backed out, I decided to run for that seat. And it was basically the South Lafayette House seat, District 43, the district that's yeah. currently occupied by Stuart Bishop. Mm-hmm. So then after one term in the House, I was able to run for the Senate and up against Max Jordan. Alan Baires had held the Senate seat, but was beat by Max Jordan. So I ran against and was elected to the Senate. And it was during the Mike Foster era. Mm-hmm. So Mike Foster was elected governor and, you know, popular and pro-business and had really kind of turned the tables from the legislative past of trial lawyers and labor unions to more pro-business. So it was sort right. of a momentum that the state was moving, and Foster led that effort. Uh-huh. So I ran for and was elected to the Senate in 1999 and served there for 12 years, the Senate seat that's currently occupied by Paige Cortez, right. the Senate president.
So the lines have changed over the years, but not dramatically. I mean, that's been a Lafayette seat.
Right. As the legislature deals with redistricting, just mm-hmm. like they will this year after the mm-hmm. 2020 census, the district grows in population, so you have to shrink the district size. So the Senate district would go all the way to I-10 and even north of I-10 in previous years, but now it is shrunk to almost completely within South Lafayette Parish. Yeah,
right.
And then the House district is completely on the East Bayou side of the river.
Because so it's contained.
It's yeah. contained, and every 10 years, they have to shrink the size of the district to keep the numbers all the same.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask, when you ran, I know you had experience from both your brother's campaigns and your dad's life, but was it what you expected the first time you ran? I mean, I know I've run for office, it's a lot more work than people realize.
It is.
It's not just smile and wave.
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, obviously the campaign is always a rewarding experience, mm-hmm. as I say, because you meet a lot of people mm-hmm. and you get to go out and there's functions. In getting into the legislature, term limits was passed on the same ballot when I first ran in 1995. So term limits obviously hadn't kicked in. Everybody else was grandfathered. So a lot of the guys that I served with had been there for, you know, several years. I mean, mm-hmm. they were some of the old timers, so to speak. So
and they're still there.
A few of them are still there. But it's I kind of felt like it was a great opportunity and a great time because Edwin Edwards' era pretty mm-hmm. much had come to an end. He had just announced that he was not going to seek reelection. They had just finished a legislative session, and mm-hmm. so Mike Foster and several others, including Mary Landrieu and Buddy Romer and others, were all running for governor. So I felt like it was a great time to get involved. And I always viewed politics as sort of the next level of public service. Mm-hmm. If you serve on boards and commissions like we all do and you do as well, running for office is sort of the next level of public service. Mm-hmm. So, and it can be frustrating, and it can also be very rewarding if you do some good things and move the ball down the field.
That was pretty bold, running against an incumbent.
Yeah, well,
but you did have a different message. I know what you're saying.
Right,
Mike's is a fine person, but he had a different
correct. Background. And at the time, you know, I was encouraged by the business community, mm-hmm. the oil and gas community, and Governor Foster himself to say, "Look, I have this agenda. This guy's not on board with this agenda. So you know, you need to. Mm-hmm. We need somebody in Lafayette." And I guess the makeup of this district in Lafayette was such that it was a very pro-business mm-hmm. District that was not as reflective as Max was for the district. So,
were you a Republican at that point?
I was a Republican, correct, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And really, just not long before that, a lot of people weren't Republican.
And I was elected to the House the first time as a Democrat, actually, and then switched in the middle of that term. But
priorities changed. It was so interesting, that whole period, how Louisiana really changed.
And people, we really worked across the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Mike Foster himself changed to Republican right before he qualified to run for governor.
Right.
But he had Hunt Downer as his Speaker of the House, who was a Democrat at mm-hmm. the time, and Randy Ewing as his President of the Senate, who was a Democrat. So you had a lot more bipartisanship in the legislature where
they were moderate.
Yeah, a lot more moderate, and your party label did not mean everything that it means today.
Yeah, today, it's like a you know, black or white.
Right.
Republican, and Democrat, which I kind of miss those older times where people listened. And
we worked more with our regional delegation. So the Acadiana delegation would get together to talk about priorities for UL and I-49 and other things that were important to our region. Mm-hmm. The party caucuses, Republican and Democratic caucuses, would plan their fundraisers and raise money. So you really didn't have the agenda set by your Republican or Democratic delegation. The agenda was more set by your regional delegation. And the regional delegation had on the needs, because you had Republicans, Democrats, and everyone usually could vote for and represent their district first and foremost, whether they were a Democrat or Republican. So it is something that's changed dramatically, considering the movement of Congress and how partisan Congress has become. And the legislature is now becoming more partisan itself.
You think that, I don't know how the gerrymandering and the, you know,
redistricting
is going to go, but do you think there's any hope that we could go back to a more moderate, you know, ability to discuss what our real needs as a state are?
Well, when the legislature is required to draw so many what they call majority-minority districts, it makes the Republican districts more Republican and the Democratic districts more Democrat. So you have fewer and fewer districts that are balanced, so to speak, where you have, you know, 60-40 or even 50-50. So most of the districts are now, you know, heavily Republican or majority Republican
or
majority Democrat, right?
Yeah.
And then we see that in the congressional districts as well, not only the legislative districts. So you have, you know, it's just the kind of the nature of the way things
are. Where we are today.
Right.
Mike, on that note, I'd like to pause for a moment because I want you to get into what it was like to serve and segue into your current career with the PCAR group. But I'd like to look back at an interview that we did with your friend of mine, Senator Fred Mills from the Brobridge area. In this little clip, it was back in 2018 when they were just passing the medical marijuana bills. But I asked Fred the question about what other issues are coming up. And I think it's pretty indicative of the day-to-day life of a state senator. Let's take a listen. Are there any other issues coming up? I know we have a lot on the ballot coming up. We have constitutional amendments. Anything that is on your radar that you'd like to plug?
You know, I think for right now, as a legislator, is the day-to-day activities. Like just next Monday, I have a full hearing with the Senate Health and Welfare Committee on just a rule that was written by an agency. So it's every day. I think the biggest issue right now that's in my plate is issues with mental health, behavioral health, addictive disorders. That's a big issue right now. So you stay focused kind of on the discipline of law that you work with, because there's so many things that you could work on. I try and really during the off season stay very connected to the healthcare piece. But it's always gonna be roads. Roads is, I mean, no one is calling me, and rightfully so, to say my road is in really good shape.
Thank you, and
I'm enjoying driving on it. I don't know, I've not gotten that call
especially
yet.
Bridge.
Oh my God, around cane season and the rains and everything. So that's an issue. I'll tell you another issue that's in our area that's still a huge issue, and we working hard on it, is comprehensive drainage. You know, as we know, the 2016 floods, that's an issue that I'm always working with Department of Transportation on, and it's a tough issue. Right. So it's always going to be, is the budget in full force? Is it where we need it right now? And I guess for everybody, we will always have more demand for resources than resources.
Oh, I think so. Even if our budget doubled,
exactly,
you could never meet everybody's
exactly
needs.
And that person or that constituency's needs are as important as anything else.
Welcome back to Discover Lafayette. You can find our interview with Senator Fred Mills and about 190-something others at discoverlafayette.net. And we also want to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast. So, Mike, back to you. You were a young father, businessman, and elected official. Those days must be a blur in so many ways.
Yeah, it's a lot of water has gone under the bridge, so to speak. And, you know, my kids were young at the time. I think when I was first elected, we just had Mikey, our son, and then Mary Carolyn came a year or two after I was elected. But they grew up in the process, and they kind of think it was cool. You know,
I know.
I missed some events and certainly couldn't make it back for all their events, but I tried to drive home as often as I could to make everything. Mm-hmm. And
you were the bus stop dad.
Tried to be the bus stop dad.
We'd see you in the mornings at the bus stop, and I was always amazed. But, how does he do it?
Always enjoyed that time, and I figured if I wanted to see them at any point during the week, and then look, hats off to our current legislators. You know, Stuart Bishop has small kids. Jean-Paul Cousin has small kids. And I see their challenges. They try to make it back for their kids' activities and their kids' games.
And work and
do their day job and serve in the legislature. And they're both in leadership roles, as well as Paige Cortez, although his kids are older and he has one grandkid and another one on the way.
He does. That.
So
he's
it's
so
a different,
young.
A different stage for him. But it is a challenge. But I said, if we truly want to have a citizen legislature, if you really care about the future of the state and you want to make it better for your kids and grandkids, I think it you need to serve when you can do it and you have the energy to do it as well.
And it's not just when the session is in, but I know you as chair of the Senate Finance, that touches just about everything, every department, every aspect of government.
It is. And that's what I tell Representative Bishop and President Cortez, of course. They are really in statewide roles now, even though they represent Lafayette. Their district is Lafayette.
Yeah.
Bishop as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee and Page as Senate president. They have the entire state under their purview, funding budgets, all of higher ed, all of health care. So it's a very big responsibility that they have. And of course, I had the same thing as Senate Finance Chairman, but it does open your eyes to all the things that make Louisiana click. And it's we have our challenges, but we also have some many, many blessings that this state has.
I've heard it's hard to understand the state budget, especially capital improvement
projects.
Yeah,
I still don't understand it.
I was wondering if you did. Capital outlay for dummies,
Yeah, it's a challenge, and we rely heavily on staff.
Yeah.
And we have some incredible staff at the Capitol that have been there for years and have an institutional knowledge. But with term limits, as legislators rotate in and out, it gives the staff that much more power, which can be good or bad. You know, it can help you, but it can also be bad. Is that as soon as you figure out how the process works, you gotta go out. You know,
I know. I always wondered about that. I know that it's good to get fresh blood in, and some people have run. Like if they were in the Senate, then they'd run to serve in the House and vice versa. But that institutional knowledge is a good thing too.
It is.
It's a good thing because you're still accountable to the people, but you know what you're doing.
And there was the same ballot in 1995 when I first ran for the House. The term limits, as I mentioned, was voted on that ballot. And also there was a group called the Dirty Dozen. So they targeted 12 legislators that had been there for years, 60 Rayburn and Armin Brinkhouse and others.
Little characters.
And they really went after beating those because they'd been there for so many years, And
they knew how to get things done.
And they did know how to get things done. And many of them, had been there for a while. And others, like Tyron's father, Cecil Picard, they leave the legislature and they become superintendent of education. So he had the legislative knowledge and the relationships inside the Capitol and then become superintendent. So it makes him an effective statewide official having that experience.
You have any favorite things, that were part of your tenure as an elected official, things you look back on?
I always thought that under the Foster years, particularly the first Foster term, we did some good things. Mm-hmm. The TOPS program, we set up the state's rainy day fund. Teacher pay raises were a big issue at the time. Mm-hmm. The teachers were far behind the Southern average. We did some good things, and you felt like you were part of positive momentum for the state, making Louisiana more business friendly and economically, competitive with other states. So we were always asked to provide certain tax incentives for businesses to locate or expand in Louisiana, and it was always to compete with Texas. So if Texas had something in place that we didn't, we would always try to match the incentive that Texas had. So some people say, well, we might have done too much, and maybe in hindsight we did, but it was always to try to put Louisiana to stay in the game and be competitive and be a player.
Right. I guess people criticize just about anything, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Did you develop a thick skin?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, I guess what has changed the process is, the 24-hour news cycle and social media now. I mean, social media allows anyone and everyone to get out there and kind of talk about and criticize the legislators.
And talk radio.
That's right.
I don't think we had big stations at the beginning of your service as we do now, where it's 2 hours a day.
Correct.
And there's a reason to learn things.
Yeah.
But,
And it was, you
people
know,
would have to read the paper more to find out what was going on.
People love to hate the legislature and they love to hate Congress, but they once they get to know their members, mm-hmm. they say, well, they're not bad guys. These are real men and women that have real jobs and real families. And
care.
And they care. They're trying to do the right thing for the right reasons. And by and large, I think the legislature is citizens that are just going over there to try to make a difference. You know, they want to do some good things and they want to make Louisiana better.
Would you serve again if you were at this point in your life and you hadn't served yet? You know, I guess I didn't ask it right, but do you think you would still want to serve?
Yeah, if I hadn't served and I was at this stage, I'd consider. I'm not saying I'm going to go back, but I'm just saying if I hadn't served, I would be open to serving. Absolutely, I think you know, you feel like it's your sort of a civic duty.
Any advice to people that want to run for office? Anything they should do to prepare for that journey?
I always try to encourage people who want to run. You know, they say, look, it's another form of public service, and the campaign, win, lose, or draw, is a positive experience. Like I said, you get to meet people, and you're out there, and you're engaged, and you realize what makes, you know, what the issues are. But I think I always encourage people that say, look, it's a great way to serve, and good people should run for office, because if not, you're not going to have anybody that wants to run anymore.
Right, right. Any other thoughts on your time in the legislature? Anything I should have asked
you? There was some, I mean, we had some funny moments and some, you know, people like Freddie Mills who have always been great to work with. And obviously there's some very stressful moments and a lot of stress and tension. But generally, like I said, it's good people that want to serve for the right reasons.
Right, right. Well, I want to encourage people to run too, because you know, even if somebody's doing a great job, I think just the community engagement, like having forums.
Right.
Having to answer about this is what I believe every 4 years to get people to talk about what the issues are and what they've done. That's, because so many of us don't really know what's going on and we'll just see TV, you know, little ads, and you don't really know the issues.
No, it's true. And people need to, then when you have to, when you go to the ballot box, and we want people to feel empowered to vote, say go exercise your right to vote, understand the amendments, which that's going to be
a
challenge. But but you know, you want people to exercise their right to vote. I always encourage kids when they turn 18, go register and try to vote in every election if you can.
I know. We've encouraged that too, and our girls both vote, and I'm so proud of them because they really do care about the future. They want the state to be a place that they want to be proud of and stay. But
that's,
you know,
good.
You never know where they're going to end up, do you?
No, you're right.
Well, let's talk about your role at the Picard Group. So you brought just vast experience to them. And was that formed back in 2011, 2012?
Tyron Picard, longtime friend of mine and Cecil Picard's son.
Yeah.
Tyron formed the firm in 2011. And then when I left office after term limited out, I joined him. Since then, we've picked, you know, former Congressman Rodney Alexander, who was also a legislator with me and served in the 5th District. He's part of our firm, and also former Speaker Chuck Cleckley, who served a couple of terms after me. And so we're part of a group that does the state and federal government relations. I guess the serving and working in the Picard Group has allowed me to stay involved in the political arena, stay involved in the process, and stay plugged into the legislators that you served with. It keeps you involved. And we represent a variety of clients on a variety of issues at the state, local, and federal level. But
what type of issues? Like what type of things?
A lot of it, like we, you know, UL Lafayette's a client of ours, and they're generally concerned about funding for the university, funding for capital projects. We represent the economic development organizations across the state. They're concerned about the incentives, make sure that the incentives remain intact so that Louisiana remains competitive when it comes to recruiting and expanding businesses in Louisiana. So we have some healthcare clients, Acadian Ambulance and Lafayette General and others. And those, it's generally about funding. You know, if you're dependent on the state through the Medicaid or the Medicare program, then obviously the funding and the budget cycle is critical to the success of your business. So a lot of what we do is making sure that we're their eyes and ears in and around state government. So in session and outside of session, we monitor what's going on and advocate on behalf of them for their issues. So it's very rewarding. We have, you know, the city of Broussard is also a client and several others in the business and public sector arena.
So you don't just deal with legislators then or the governor and Jay Darden. You must deal with the heads
agencies
of departments and keep them abreast of changing trends in those industries.
Correct. And we have to transcend, you know, at the Department of Health, for example, we've probably, since I left the legislature, there's been two or three secretaries. So you have to work with each one of those as they rotate in and out and make sure you have a relationship with them. Sometimes they're new. Sometimes they're coming back from another position in state government. So it's our job to have those relationships so that our clients have the access that they need, just so their position is heard. It's not always 100% in their favor, but we want to make sure that they have access to the stakeholders, the people that make the decisions and set the policy that affects their business.
So what do you think is going to happen this coming session? Like it's a revenue session. So I'd like to see better roads. I mean, what and I know you were always a proponent of kind of fixing our tax structure as far as roads and all, but what do you anticipate is going to happen this session?
Because this is a fiscal session and the legislature is taking on fiscal reform, Senator Brett Allain, who is Representative Bishop's counterpart on the Senate side, is from down the road in Franklin.
He's a farmer, he says.
That's Mike Foster's old district. Mm-hmm. So he and Stuart Bishop are going to be the two that will lead the tax reform effort.
And that's going to be to centralize, hopefully, sales tax?
Centralized sales tax collection is part of it. Uh-huh. That probably has the best shot at passing. That's actually going to be a bill that's pushed by the speaker and others.
Yeah,
and
that's major overall. That's
major. And then the legislature has been, we've been toying with that for years and trying to get the support and remove the opposition from the locals. So that's probably going to go through. There's others dealing with inventory tax, franchise tax, and that are going to be also making their way through the process. The gas tax, actually, it's a little more of an uphill battle because it is a tax increase at the pump, and it does require 2/3 vote. So any of the revenue-raising measures require a 2/3 vote of the House and the Senate. It's tough to get 2/3 vote on anything. Uh-huh. But and then this federal money that was just announced from Washington, you know, the state stands to receive somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
In addition to local government getting, you know, millions and millions of dollars, each municipality and parish.
Is it possible we could invest that?
So that is one-time money, but it can, the rules have yet to come out, but it's more than likely going to be allowed to be used for road projects and infrastructure. So that could be a huge boost to the economy.
$3 billion.
That's a lot of money. Yeah. In addition to that, the talk is that the feds will come down with an infrastructure package later this year. So they're going to pump money and do their own infrastructure package. The state will likely have to come up with its share of match dollars. Mm-hmm. So there's some talks about where that money is going to come from. But in the short term, the $3 billion is going to be coming, you know, and hopefully the legislature will do something meaningful and significant with that, because I think this is an opportunity that we may not see for a long time.
The Capitol is going to be a busy place, huh?
It is. And with the recovery and the hurricanes and everything else, the COVID and everything else that they've had to deal with last year, many of the legislators held back on their normal load of bills. So a lot of those bills will be rolled over to this year. So they're going to have, in addition to the fiscal bills, they can each have up to five non-fiscal bills.
Oh, they don't have to be germane to the fiscal issues.
Correct.
Okay.
So the ones that we're talking to have a pretty hefty load, and there'll be a lot of bills.
That's a lot of bills.
Being filed over the next few weeks. Yeah. The session starts the 12th. Of April and runs until June 10th. So,
well, we're taping this. What's today? The 16th of March.
16th, right.
So I got you before. You're busy as a bee again. Yeah. Are you looking forward to it?
I am. I think it's. Last year was such an odd year with the COVID and the restrictions. You know, those of us that need to go to the Capitol didn't go unless we had to. Everybody was masked up and obviously tried to follow all the safety protocols, and some didn't go at all. Some members didn't go at all. And unfortunately, the legislature had their own share of, they lost a member to COVID, and we lost a former member to COVID and others who were impacted. So it was sort of a strange year in many ways. So hopefully everything's behind us and we can get back to business as usual. So I think it'll be interesting to see, and hopefully that unfolds and I think people are ready to start getting out there and spending money, and there's a lot of pent-up demand, and hopefully we'll have a good, strong, robust 2021 and on into the future.
Yeah, I've seen that. It seems like driving around here in Lafayette, all of a sudden, man, it's
Traffic.
Traffic and restaurants appear to be packed. I mean, to the limit. I'm not saying they're breaking the rules, but we just haven't seen that many cars in front of a building in so long.
I think people are just ready to get out.
They're ready to see their friends.
And, you know, as the vaccine, as more and more receive the vaccine, that they feel like it's safer and, you know, people are starting to socialize a little bit more. So I think that's just the nature of who we are as people, especially the South Louisiana people.
Right, right. Anything else you want to share, like anything going on?
I think it's just, like I said, the state has so much potential and we have a really... we certainly have our set of challenges, but I think, you know, the legislature working together with the governor and others, they have a very ambitious but a very positive agenda, and I hope they can get most of it through this session. I think it'll be meaningful and put Louisiana on a positive track.
Right, right. Well, Mike Misha, I want to thank you for your service, not only to our community, but to our state and country. You obviously love people, and you love what you've done.
Well,
thank you. I've watched you through the years, and you've just always been one of those with the positive outlook, and we need that.
Well, appreciate it. Thank you so much. And appreciate it. Happy to be here.
I know most of us love the state, and if we all look at what we can do individually in our own homes, in our towns, in our state, I really feel like we could turn the state around. We have an opportunity, and I think COVID has opened doors for us to look at how can we operate better.
You're right.
Not just different, but better.
Right.
And I want to thank
you
for being up there. And I also want to thank our listeners. This podcast has been such an adventure in getting to interview people like Mike Misha and to share these interviews. So you can go to discoverlafayette.net and pass along these interviews to people that might be interested. I'd like to thank our sponsors also who make this podcast possible. First of all, Iberia Bank, which is now a part of First Horizon. They've been very loyal and generous sponsors. And Ochsner Lafayette General, we thank you so much for your continued commitment to Discover Lafayette. And last but not least, Raider and Jason Socorro, who mixes our tape and fixes my sound and makes it sound professional. We thank you, Jason and Chris Raider and the whole team at Raider. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift. Thank you for listening.